For December the 22nd, 2023, we talk about Asgard's Wrath 2, Blood West, Skull and Bones, and much more. Welcome to Level 483. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Moxie.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. And it's the last show of the year.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's going to be a bit of a short one, too, because Ben has a hard out. And I assume, I don't know if you're...
He has a what? Ben, that's inappropriate.
Hey, now.
I'm waiting for a
time. Putting that down in the titles.
And hard out. Yeah, I'm waiting for a time when I can where it makes sense for me to crack open this ginger ale. So I've got that waiting as a punchline underliner here. Yeah. No.
Nice. Is it LA?
No. I picked up Verner's. Because I remembered how much I love Verner's.
Yeah. Well, and nice. Sorry, are we allowed to say that you're feeling a little under the weather?
Yeah. How dare you?
Okay. Yeah. Just because Verner's and chicken noodle soups are panaceas. Like, oh, yeah. That's just science.
Yeah, Verner's chicken noodle soup and the Sprite from McDonald's. Yeah, very specifically the Sprite from McDonald's. I just that's my banter. A little under the weather. I'm gonna do my best to definitely hide me blowing my nose and my sneezes from the listeners. Don't know if I'm gonna catch them all for the folks here on the call. We're gonna be here. I went to urgent care. about it because I didn't want to be sick for the holidays, and apparently that's what everybody's doing because this bug is everywhere.
That's what they say, like the secret to staying healthy is never go to the hospital.
Yes. Yeah,
it's a which bit... like I feel the need to disclaim, obviously I don't mean that like, oh, I'm having horrible chest pains, better not go to the hospital.
Yeah No, just as long as I don't go, this lump is benign. Yeah. So that's what I've got going on. Just, fighting like hell, against an upper respiratory infection. Yeah. Wish me luck. Dennis, how about you? What's going on?
Let's see. What's going on with me? I've been helping my kids with some school projects to, round out the year.
Okay.
That's fun. They both had to give like little speeches. Luke's was today. Milo's is tomorrow. And Milo's had to be a biography. And he wanted to do someone gaming related.
Ooh.
So I pointed him towards Shigeru Miyamoto.
Ooh, cool. Ooh.
Yeah. And that was fun.
Mm-hmm.
To have him research and be like, wait, he did that too? He did that too? He did that too?
Wait a minute.
This man's done half the catalog of games I've played in my life.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So that is a good time.
Mm-hmm.
Found out I also pointed him that way because that was the only video game creator I could find that had like an age appropriate biography published.
Right. Yeah.
I could give him, you know, Masters of Doom with the Johns, Romero and Carmack, but that felt a little out of his league.
You could have just pointed
him at, was it Yoko Taro or whatever, and just like sat back and watched.
Oh, that's the moon guy, right?
Yeah, the guy's just famously a troll.
Yeah.
Also famously happy, isn't he?
Oh, I've got no idea. I don't know.
I mean, the moon is always smiling.
Yeah. Miyamoto, apparently, when he was a kid in Japan, loved exploring outside, found a hole in the ground, came back the next day with a lantern and crawled into it and discovered an entire cave system.
Yeah, found Zelda.
Yeah. I was going to say, you can see that inspiration in a couple games. So,
yeah,
fun stuff.
How do your kids handle, because like one of the first like memories of a panic attack that I have, because when you realize you have a psychological condition, you start looking back and stuff like starts making sense. Like, oh no, I've always had anxiety. One of my first like memories of acute panic was preparing for a presentation in like second grade. and just being absolutely wrapped around the axle, just breathless because I couldn't remember exactly the words that were in there.
Oh no.
Yeah. Yeah. Like how do they do with that pressure?
Milo is water over the sand. He is unfazable. Mm-hmm. You know, in all areas of life. So this is no different. Luke maybe had a little anxiety. He was like, you know, well, no, I should phrase it differently. Luke derped around and ignored the project until the last minute, then had some anxiety catching up for something that was completely preventable.
Yeah.
But then by the time like the day of rolled around, he was all about it. He was very excited.
Nice. Okay.
Because he was sharing a family tradition, and we make a special kind of cake for birthdays called cracker cake. And do words of affirmation where everyone before we eat cake says something nice about the birthday boy or girl.
Cool.
And so he got to bring cake to class.
Ooh,
which made him the most popular kid. Yeah.
Very popular. Yeah.
So that kid is doing it right.
Also, but cool. Yeah. I love that your you know, reaction to this experience was, why don't I make my life work talking in front of people?
Immersion therapy, baby.
That's right.
Yeah, I opened up the ginger ale, but it wasn't close enough to the microphone.
No, I heard it. I heard
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no, it. We'll fix it in post. I don't even know what that means.
So yeah, well, that's cool. That's are they done with school now? Like
they actually are going to school all this week.
Wow.
Which, like, you know, Thursday and Friday are just movie days. Right?
Oh yeah,
like,
yeah.
Probably like a war.
They'll probably
or
wear their pajamas.
Hmm.
Yeah, well, you know, they get the solid 2 weeks from then on out. But and certainly, Daddy doesn't mind there. They have a couple extra school days there.
Yeah, true.
So
yeah.
Have you
I'll take them where I can get them.
Christmasing.
For the most part, yes. And I've finished my grading for the semester. As of today, actually. So I am truly a free man over Christmas break.
Nice. Yeah. No, we're done, done recording and stuff tomorrow. So,
awesome.
Looking forward to that. Mm-hmm. Nice. Ben, how about you? What's going on?
Yeah. Similar spot of just getting final preparations. I'm flying back to Cincinnati on Thursday, but then immediately going down to Ironton where my dad really lives. Mm-hmm. So just got to do packing and then do frantic amounts of shopping in those few days between when I arrive and when Christmas is.
Right.
Because I refuse to bring a suitcase with me whenever I travel.
Yeah. I mean, Christmas. That's tough. But like, I don't know, if you can't knock out your Christmas shopping in 2 days.
Yeah.
You know, just the plan is tougher, like knowing what you're going to get people. That's the tough thing. Actually going and getting it is the easy part.
Yeah. 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 For sure.
Yeah.
But I'm nice. Looking forward to being around friends and family though for a week. So it'll be fun.
Nice.
Yeah.
Anything like on the docket that you're like especially excited to go do?
So we have a family tradition where we eat hot wings on like Christmas Eve, a la hot ones. Ooh. And, that's always a good time. So I usually am the one dressing them, and I try and like standardize the heat and everything, or like, you know, the measurements of the hot sauce for each one. And then people basically drop out one by one. And then I think my beverage of choice with this is Kahlua as a milk substitute sort of thing. So
Kahlua and hot wings.
Yeah. You just want to make sure that everybody is as sick as possible on Christmas Day, huh?
Well, look,
that's disgusting. And I was drinking a Myrtle Beach during Duckstream.
Man, I was going to save you from that. Like, I was going to save you from ever bringing up the Myrtle Beach again.
I thought I was in a safe space, you know.
That but Kahlua doesn't have a cream element to it. It's just a coffee liqueur, right?
Yeah, you can add some like Bailey's with it as well.
Okay,
yeah.
The Kahlua, it does nothing.
No, you see, because it's wings, you mix the Kahlua with ranch.
Oh God! Oh no!
I'm not going that close to a Myrtle Beach.
I feel like is that like a I don't know a white Ohioan or something?
God Lord, yeah,
Outer Banks maybe.
That's what it's called now. It's the North Myrtle Beach. that's where my family stayed. So. Myrtle Beach was a heinous cocktail that, that Dennis decided to drink on stream.
It was great. And I maintain that the stomach cramps were completely unrelated.
Good Lord. Oh, Moxie, how about you? What's going on?
Not a whole lot. So actually I posted our Slack, when one of the things they do that's kind of neat, down here is there's a awesome park in the middle of the city, and all of the various like businesses and you know, like I don't know, clubs and stuff like that in the city all put up Christmas trees that are decorated just various random ways. So for example, like all the architectural firms, they look like you know, DAP student, you know, projects, just like you know, art deco like craziness.
DAP being this University of Cincinnati Art and Design school, for anybody who's listening who doesn't recognize what that is.
Design, art, architecture, and planning, perhaps?
Yes. I gain a lot of joy from the fact that planning comes last.
I mean, based on the building, right?
Yeah. I've never thought of that. That's great.
But speaking of designs and architecture where planning comes last, one of the trees was a Tears of the Kingdom tree.
Oh, cool. is that apropos to any of the businesses there?
No, I think that's just what someone wanted to do. The business was
something systems.
Yeah. Analysis.
Your soul is floating away from your body. Sorry. Come back.
Sorry, I was leaning in to look. But yeah, they've got the sign from... I haven't played this game, but my understanding is the plot is there is an apocalypse that destroys the kingdom, and due to budgetary setbacks, they hire literally one guy to repair everything. Yeah, so it was fun. There's some sort of weird, like, is there some sort of wigwam or something in the game? There's something built behind it that I couldn't figure out what the hell it was supposed to be.
I don't know what that is. It looks like the entrance is some kind of cave.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, it might have something to do with the disco ball with the Santa hat on it.
Yeah, I got nothing. But anyways, I enjoyed that.
Yeah, a little communal festivity.
Yep.
Cool. Well, that's fun. We should get in and talk about games. Why don't we do that? I think that sounds like a good idea. We should. By doing the regular kind of show, what with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. Why don't we get started with...
The Grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the last period of time or so. Who has something new?
I have something actually very new.
Moxie, you went first.
Fight. I heard
you first.
So I picked up Blood West. So Blood this West. Is a Ooh, new indie game that is a fairly open world stealth game with kind of a low poly sort of boomer shooter aesthetic.
Okay.
So I feel like the whole like the era of the boomer shooter was before I really got into gaming. So yeah. I feel like probably people that are from that time like would look at this and be like, oh yeah, it's aping such and such. But at least to me, what I'd kind of describe it as is it's somewhere between like a Deus Ex type game, except where your only two verbs are like stealth and combat. There's no, you know, hacking or, you know, complex dialogues. Or alternately, it's like a boomer shooter where, you know, stealth is like the focus.
This looks rad as hell. I had no idea this game existed. Yeah, this
Does
is
it have the same like zippy movement of boomer shooters?
Not. Like I said, it's very stealth oriented, so it is not, you're not like, you know, doing pogo jumping or anything like that.
Yeah. It's this looks like it has way more in common with like Deus Ex or Arx Fatalis. Maybe some Thief in there. Yeah, this looks like Wild West Gloomwood to me.
Yeah.
And also it looks really cool. Like, how is it?
So basically the plot line is you're a I guess undead cowboy that is in this I don't know, region or whatever, where someone dug up some cursed gold and everything went to hell. You know, you being so you're going around and you know, being tasked with finding all of these various you know, golden artifacts, and so that you can bury them under some like skull, I don't know, idol thing that's like talking to you, you know, going at telling you to go out on this mission, which that seems a little sketch, but
is it promising you a return to death? Like,
yes. Although, sorry, I say that questioningly because it has a so I just started watching on Crunchyroll was it Soul Eater?
Okay.
And the skull that's talking to me reminds me a little bit of death in that it's mostly dramatic, like you must do this to, you know, defeat the forces of evil and save this cursed land, but it's also got a lot of snark.
Okay.
So it's kind of like, yeah, do this and you can return to death. I mean, I think.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, so it's like, yeah, you're not inspiring a lot of confidence.
Yeah. So you might be helping this being, consolidate power. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that's, you know, certainly a possibility, but you know, what are you going to do when a skull tells you to go fetch evil, artifacts? You know, you don't question it.
I don't think you have that much.
It makes me
think
of when those hustlers come up to you on the street and they're like, hey, my car ran out of gas and I checked the bus station and you know, the police told me I needed $2 for gas. Like, there's a rehearsed like line about needing gas for your car. And you're like, I know exactly what you're doing, but we're gonna run this bit, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yep. But then so the actual gameplay, like I said, very stealth oriented. You get guns, that sort of thing. However, ammo's relatively limited. The gameplay really, really focuses on, you know, headshots are very important. And
so yeah, Moxie, I feel like you play every game as a stealth game. So this is like a stealth game even by normal standards.
Yes. That is definitely true. Partially because, you know, like I said, ammunition fairly limited and you are fairly squishy. And there's also I haven't seen actual numbers, but, you know, dramatically more damage on a sneak attack. To the point where, like, basically from what I've seen, a headshot sneak attack, I think so far, will kill like every non-boss enemy in the game. So that is very cool. There's a lot of neat enemies. They've each got a neat kind of ambient like chatter effect when you're near them. So like one of them is called, the enemy is called like the prodigal daughter.
Okay.
And it's basically this like busty, you know, tavern girl, like you'd see in a Western, except that her head is a skull.
Okay.
And so when you're near, you just get kind of this ambient, like, voices in your head effect of her just, you know, talking about how beautiful she is, about how, you know, no one around here appreciates her, and, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of creepy.
Yeah.
The other interesting thing is when you die, since you're a, you know, immortal revenant, you just straight up come back to life, but you gain a curse, and, you know, you gain some debuff, and it starts out basically the first three times you, or first two times, I guess, you die, you get kind of a minor version of the curse, and then the third time it's a, you know, greater. So, like, one of them is you know, whenever you take damage, you're like 10% more likely to start bleeding. And mm-hmm. then, you know, second level is say like 20%, and then third level is like 75%.
Oh.
Hmm. How do you clear that?
Yeah, so basically, the Snarky Skull informs you that it would definitely cure the curse for you for free, but wouldn't you know it, it doesn't have, you know, the components it needs. So it sends you out, and you basically have some sort of kill challenge, so it'll either be, you know, kill so many of this enemy via stealth, kill so many enemies with a headshot, you know, kill certain enemies, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those things, it ends up feeling kind of like a Dark Souls type of thing, more than anything, where it's definitely a major annoyance, but not crippling.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest complaint I have with this game is that the stealth system is a little quirky. It models both whether the enemy can see you and whether they can hear you. And when that happens, a bar starts filling. And, you know, once it fills, they detect you. The weird thing is your footsteps make noise, like, even if you're walking up behind someone. So often you'll have to, like, you know, get close to someone, then pause and wait for the bar to go down, then go a little farther and then pause.
Seems like that's a great way for them to turn around and see you.
Yeah, exactly. You do have a chuck a rock thing from like every game. It seems a little unreliable in my experience.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that's weird is that this, you know, have you been detected bar is shared by enemies. So you'll have a thing, you could have a thing where like one enemy kind of just sees you, so the bar is filling up a little bit, and then you're walking up behind another enemy, and so that's also contributing, so your bar will fill up super quick, even though neither enemy particularly can sense you.
Hmm.
So some stuff like that, I would say, if you pick it up, you know, investing points into stealth, which basically makes the bar feel slower, I guess maybe effectively gives you a longer bar, is definitely kind of the meta way to do things.
So my question is, you know, the measure of any stealth game is what happens when you get seen. Is it insta-fail? Is it effectively insta-fail? Like, what do you do to kind of, like, recover and gain the upper hand again?
Yeah, so from what I've seen, there's a couple of things. You can run away. That's been somewhat unreliable. It seems like maybe it depends on the specific type of enemy that's following you, how well that goes.
Mm-hmm.
For a lot of enemies, most notably the ones that attack you with firearms, it's fairly easy to run away because they're not particularly trying to closed melee range.
Mm-hmm.
And it does have the Neo issue of like once they give up on you, they walk back to wherever they were supposed to be, at which point you can just follow them and stab them in the back.
Yeah, that's a little...
although, again, this is, at least for me, not an easy game. So, you know, it's sort of, to a certain degree, I use the cheese I can get.
Yeah, yeah.
Other than that, if either you can't run away or you don't want to, that's when headshots become very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm playing on the Steam Deck, so I don't have mouse and keyboard, so... It's not that realistic for me to get a headshot with a weapon that's with a ranged weapon that's coming when enemies charging directly towards me. So I'm usually using like my axe, you know, my melee weapon. And in that, basically, if I can get the swing, you know, use the downward swing power attack to hit an enemy square in the head, it will often one shot them.
The enemy's head is down.
Exactly.
No.
It's the, yes, the Ender's Game of slasher horror. So it's one of those things where it becomes very, very important on how good are you at, like, old school shoddy, not shoddy, but you know what I mean, kind of janky, clunky, melee physics.
Mm-hmm.
So overall, my feeling on this game is I think this game is probably not for me. I was coming into it looking for more of like either a Far Cry, kind of a Far Cry remake, you know, where it was a lot more like, hey, you're in this open world and you can like outmaneuver enemies and, you know, easily taken by stealth as long as you plan ahead type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or I was looking for something that is a Deus Ex that is more of a, you know, kind of tactical puzzle solving, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
However, this does seem to me like a game that is probably a lot of people's game. And I feel like for the people that liked that, like you said, like Thief or, you know, those sorts of things, I could see this being a game that, you know, is they absolutely love. Also, I have to say, Weird West is one of the most underrated settings in existence. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's got that going for it.
Well, it seems like that setting is starting to get some love with the, what was the other game? Literally called Weird West, right?
Yeah, yeah. There's been a few. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nah, I mean, this might be more up my alley than yours. I thank you for putting it on my radar.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Nice.
Any other questions about that?
No.
So the only other thing I've played is I've picked up again Alan Wake.
Alan Wake the OG? First?
The first one, yeah. I'm trying to... I played about halfway through it. Before my Xbox got stolen in undergrad.
Yeah, yeah.
By a shadow person.
By a shadow person. So I'm, you know, going back and trying to play it. Unfortunately, I'm probably going to do the full-on, you know, Alan Wake, Alan Wake's American Nightmare, and then Control before I get around to Alan Wake 2.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long road.
Yeah, but you know, you've gotta watch the movies in order, right?
I believe so.
I would YouTube the first Alan Wake, and I would be comfortable with that if I were in the position, but follow your heart. I will not.
Yeah. I would say that is maybe going to get into what I'm noticing is Remedy is maybe one of my favorite, you know, game developers. I really love their approach to storytelling. You know, their weird, like, environmental, you know, TV shows and, you know, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like some of the decisions they have in the game in terms of, you know, doing some of the dream logic. And I especially appreciate the way they pace the balance of the game being kind of dark, but often, you know, kind of optimistic, hopeful, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
However, I feel like the gameplay definitely... This feels like, I think it is, a game that was kind of in between old school, like, you know, shooters, those sorts of games, and then modern, like, story forward games.
Yeah. And so
I feel like it kind of has a foot in both worlds. In particular, the thing that I find frustrating is I feel compelled to try to get the manuscript pages because, you know, I'm playing the game for the story and, you know, that's where a lot of the storytelling is. But limited ammunition combined with infinitely spawning enemies and exploring for collectibles is just not a mix that goes well together.
No.
Yeah.
I think where this is leading, I would not look askance at anybody who put either Alan Wake or Control on easy or story mode, or I don't know what they added in the remaster, which I think is what you're playing.
Yeah.
In order to kind of smooth that up, because it's not like there's a huge amount of variety that they're testing you on. Like, it's kind of the same encounter over and over again. Oh, so yeah. why would you hit your head up against that when what you're there for is not that? Yeah,
I don't think it's a coincidence that Control is like the most frictionless of the games, and it's also the one that gives you infinite ammo.
Yeah.
And I am playing on easy mode.
Okay.
I totally agree. I think the worst parts are the driving sequences,
mm-hmm.
which I really want to know. I don't know if you remember originally, I think all of the cars in the game were like Jeep Cherokees or something. It was definitely a product placement. I'd be interested to know if the only reason there's driving in it is for product placement.
No, that's a vestige of like the original version of the game. It was originally going to be open world.
Oh, really?
And they had to scale that back, and the driving was kept in because I think they felt some kind of attachment to it. It's pretty misguided. Mm-hmm. It was not just there as product placement. Same way the flashlights are not just there to sell Duracell.
Right.
Yeah.
I feel like this is a game that would not actually work that well as open world, honestly.
No.
Yeah, they seem to have had the same realization.
Yeah, that's true. But I like the story. The use of music is excellent.
Yeah,
the characters are pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I like that they get put in at least some justification for you being just supernaturally good at shooting, but
I forget what the explanation is for that.
It's so there's a flashback scene to his apartment, and he has a whole bunch of shooting trophies. So
yeah,
like
I remember
it
that.
Suggests that that's just a hobby.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So.
Huh. No, speaking about the music, it's really funny because like the standout track on for a lot of people on the first one was the Poe song, the track of Haunted, you know, that's a really good song, and B, the House of Leaves connection. And then they took it and then they twisted it around in Alan Wake 2. There's really no licensed music except they brought Poe back to record a new song specifically for the game.
That's
cool. 25 years after she last recorded anything.
That's cool. I've also though long wondered like why she didn't record again, because like my understanding is that album just performed really, really poorly, but like she's a really good singer, so it's kind of weird that, like, I don't know, do the gods of music recording be like, no, you only get one?
I mean, that was her second one, but yeah.
But
was this a Hellblade situation where someone was like, oh, you know, we just need someone to do a stand in and they loved it so much they kept it?
Poe was a, is, and she's still alive, back in the 90s, female, like pop, pop rock kind of singer person. She's also the sister of Mark Z. Danielewski, the author of House of Leaves. Her second album, Haunted, was a tie-in with House of Leaves. The shared characters and themes and stuff. My understanding is that she ended up in a real big like legal struggle with the record label, and so like she does not have like the rights to tour or perform with her actual music that she wrote that anybody would want to see her on. Yeah, so I think it's she's a casualty of like legal stuff. Yeah, so. Regardless, but the note about the music did bring that up.
Actually really excited to hear that, because that one is good. The other one, which is less interesting but is still really well used, is Space Oddity.
Mm-hmm. Oh gosh, and the Depeche Mode song that's the end at the end of one of the DLCs. I prefer Space Oddity or the Depeche Mode one, like even Poe, but especially doing In Dreams by Roy Orbison is just like, hey guys, we like David Lynch too.
this is making me want to go back and watch Twin Peaks, which
I mean
is...
it's a good idea, but also watch The Return before you play Alan Wake 2, so that way you'll see all of the ideas that Alan Wake 2 has done better.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's pretty funny, actually. Yeah. I bounced off hard off of the pilot.
Mm-hmm.
I think just, 2 hours of an episode was just kind of too much for me.
Yeah. I mean, just treat it like three individual episodes.
Yeah, that's what I need to do.
Yeah.
But... yeah, I forget. Did you ever play Max Payne 2?
Not Max Payne 2, no.
Ah, you should do that, because that one goes pretty hardcore for the
David Lynch stuff.
Yeah, thank you. Sorry, I blanked.
That's all right. Yeah, I mean, the people have definitely brought that up for Wolf as one to do.
Yep.
Yeah.
So. But yeah, that's all I've got.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I mean, this can segue into me. I finished up Alan Wake 2. I don't like it very much. Like, it's fine, but like, it is not interested in being an especially great game. It's more interested in being its own kind of like mixed media. Kind of deal, and that's fine if you really enjoy that. But if you
say that's exactly what I'm looking for,
yeah. But if you have any familiarity with the ideas that they are putting on display, it just kind of feels reheated in a lot of ways. So that's a bit of a bummer.
Would you guess this is a product of the team going too hard after making what they want to make, or being too beholden to not making what they want to make?
I don't understand what you mean.
So. You know, is it bad because, hey, they're making what they want to make and it's just not for you? Or is it bad because, like, they're kind of doing, they got pushed in a direction they didn't necessarily want to go, but they're doing it, and that you can kind of tell?
It doesn't feel compromised. It has all of the excesses and enthusiasm of something that the studio really, really wants to make. And to that end, that can be commendable in its own way. I just wish that the play was better balanced, and like the shooting felt better. And I wish things were a little bit more consistent, consistently interesting between the two protagonists. And some of the new stuff that they were trying to do, like the case board and Saga's story, where you were putting the cases together, that never really went anywhere. For me, it's used in an interesting way later on. But that's kind of it. And then the Alan Wake side of it, where you have the plot board and you're changing like plot beats at different locations, that can/could be cool. But the changes are so subtle as to be like, It's really funny because the changes are very subtle. It's hard to interpret exactly what it wants you to do to get to the version of the world where you can make progress. But the differences between them, it's very hard to tell at a glance. Also, you can have like up to like four different plot beats or descriptors for like a particular area, but each of those could also have a light that you turn off or on that changes it. So if it resorts to brute force trial and error, you're just going into the menu and then checking out eight different versions of the world to pick out where you can go. Yeah.
I also thought it was like a little bit too frantic too, because it introduced the different plots it'll introduce them the first ones like pretty slowly, but yeah, you're in an area and you can flip through four, and it's like kind of hard to track all four stories at once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it left me really underwhelmed, and not just in a like, oh, I'm a snob. So I've seen this kind of like in the mouth of madness, you know, metatextual Dark Tower, the writing affects the world kind of thing. Like, everybody's got to encounter those ideas for the first time somewhere, you know? And if this is your first blush with them, then there is a wide world of very good things awaiting you if you have a hunger for it. So go with God. But for me, it just doesn't hold together well enough as like an actual game. And it was just kind of a real bummer. If I'm being honest with you.
So, did they win you over with the jump scares at any point?
God, no. This is not a scary game, which can speak in its favor, right? Some people like spooky ideas, but they don't want to be subjected to, you know, a lot of tension or a lot of, scares. They try and mitigate that by just having jump scares that are like, a warped JPEG and a scream that happens at certain points when you're playing as Alan or whatever. And it's the cheapest, most like Mickey Mouse baby town shit that's ever been, so not gonna get me. In fact, I relished in sitting there stone-faced on stream, unmoved by them.
The world scared me long ago, Alan Wake. You can't break me now.
I don't say this to like discourage you from going after it, Moxie. It's just, this is just more like, oh yeah, I finished this game. It's one of the biggest games, and I can understand what people see in it. It's just not, it's not there.
Yeah. I think it's like the production value of the game's good. I think they get points for originality and at least trying to do creative things. But yeah, as a game as a whole, yeah, I think reheated is a very good way to describe it.
Yeah. Any questions about Alan Wake 2 and my underwhelm related to it?
So you said that you liked one story better than the other. Which one did you like better?
Sagas. Sagas is good.
Yeah.
For the story stuff. But also just because the play in hers was better. And it's those shadow people. I really don't like that Alan Wake sometimes, you know, like 20% of the time is fighting a Taken. But like you can still be hurt by these shadow enemies that when you use the flashlight to get them, they just dissipate. Like that, like that isn't different enough to me. Oh, also huge complaint about this. The Alan Wake gameplay loop, right? You have enemies that run up to you, they're the Taken. The Taken are protected by shadow. You break the shadow and make them vulnerable by focusing your flashlight on them. The visual effect in Alan Wake 2 let you know that they are still protected by shadow is basically indiscernible from the general particle effect, like chromatic aberration that's around every Taken. So I ended up wasting a whole bunch of battery charges thinking, okay, this guy, like I'm going to be wasting ammo to fire at this guy. So I better be sure I flash at them. And then, oh no, they weren't protected, but you wasted this. You ended up wasting this other limited resource. Like it really needed to be much more clear.
So the non-focus beam can kill the non-enemy people, or like it'll dissipate, but it takes like 4 or 5 seconds to shine it on them.
Yeah.
So it's a weird gameplay decision.
Yeah.
I don't know. I kind
of
like
that a factor of like the development team being, you know, in perfectly dark rooms with bright screens, and you're playing in a slightly different environment.
I mean, they're intentionally making it like mysterious where the threat is. So it's like you see like 10 shadows and you're not sure which one's the one that wants to kill you.
Yeah. But even like this happened in Saga's campaign as well, you know, fully visible enemy right in front of you. It's very difficult to tell if it's somebody who needs the flashlight or not for you to do damage on them. And like, I don't know, I was playing it on a very large 4K monitor. Sitting pretty close to it. Like it wasn't a perfectly dark room. I had my studio lights on, you know, cause I was on cam. But like, I don't know. I felt like I saw everything very clearly. So
yeah, it was the intended experience.
Yes. Or close enough to it.
Yeah.
I've got another one. And this is a game not a lot of people are going to be able to play, but I put like 2 hours into it, and I think it's cool. It's called Asgard's Wrath 2.
This got a 10 out of 10 on IGN. I'm very interested in this.
Yeah.
Really? Asgard, like Norse mythology?
Yes. Yeah. This is a game by the it's by a studio that is owned by Oculus, and it came with like I got a download code for it when I bought my Quest 3.
Oh, it's VR.
Yes, yeah, that's what I mean when I say not a lot of people are going to
get to
play it.
The disappointment.
Yeah. so it's VR. I've not played Asgard's Wrath 1. I'll probably look at it. I'll wish list it and see if it goes on sale. But what this is, at the end of the previous game, you're this unnamed god or goddess who has been, trapped by Loki through the course of that game. And now you are, trying to, like worm your way out of his, prison that he's put you in, and go and stop him and his scheming and all that, starting Ragnarok and whatnot.
Is this Hades? Is everyone like super horny?
No, it's not very horny. So you're this god, and you head off, and you're like going through like other places and other pantheons to like gather up forces, and that's what it is. And this is a first person, and it is a like an open world fantasy action RPG. I don't necessarily care about the story very much. It's pretty hokey, like, you know, mythological fantasy, you know, kind of things. I'm here for like cool first person fights and also puzzle solving kind of stuff. And this is the closest game that I have seen, to like a Half-Life Alyx or even like a Resident Evil 4 VR, that is like a full-on game that is like, okay, this isn't just a fun VR thing. This could like, this is structured like an actual big, you know, like Ubisoft open world, kind of deal. Like you're leveling up, it's open world, and that there are places where you can wander where the enemies are like over-leveled for you. So you've got to come back later. Right.
Mm-hmm.
What's really neat about this? So two neat things. First person puzzle solving. What ends up being kind of interesting is like things that are really played out in regular games, you know, like a Zelda style, you know, move this thing and then the puzzle solved, you know, kind of thing. That kind of puzzle. That can be interesting again if you're doing it in VR.
Mm-hmm.
So like you're in these temples, you've got these large dungeons that you're traveling between in order to find, you know, doodads, mystical stones or some shit. Each room, it's got their own little like navigation puzzles. There's a little bit of like Prince of Persia in this. You're doing like wall runs and you're going around pressing switches and stuff, intermixed with combat, which I'll get to. But there are also these huge chambers that you can get into that have a god altar And you're playing this game, you're this unnamed god, but like when you are out in the world, you have to possess these other heroes. So like immortal heroes. So like the first leg of the game takes place in Egypt and you are playing as Abraxas, going after on his vendetta against the gods. When you have these god altars in these larger rooms, what you can do is take god view, and suddenly, you are out.
Suddenly, there's only one set of footprints.
Yes. Yeah. Suddenly, you're not in first person as your hero. What you are kind of standing in and looking at, you're gigantic and you're looking at like a miniaturized version of the chamber that you're in. And you are doing stuff at large scale, grabbing things and moving things and solving puzzles there to manipulate and set the and like move things in the chamber, so you can hop back and forth between big mode and small mode to navigate, right? And that's really cool, like as a way to play with scale. And get you to think about the space in a different way. It happens like 3 or 4 times in like the big opening dungeon that you do. And it is cool every time. I have no reason to believe that they're going to run out of ideas, but it's a neat gimmick, to just like jump out, see the chamber in miniature and then affect big stuff and then go around and, inhabit that in the small version. Cool thing to do in VR. The perspective is absolutely sold by the fact that it's 3D.
Nice. Like so, first person Moss then.
Kinda. Yeah.
I love the idea that like having divine power just means being really big.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is a game. What's really funny is like the cutscenes in this. If you have a giantess fetish, oh boy, have I got the game for you.
Oh, no.
A lot of the gods are real big ladies. So not my thing particularly, but hey, if that is your yum, head this way, my friends. So
are
yes.
Are we talking like lady, what's her name from Resident Evil?
Oh,
or
no,
are we
no.
talking like Godzilla size?
Oh, we're talking many, many, many times the size of you as you're looking up at them. Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah. Yeah. Lady Dimitrescu is nothing. In this scene. So
Moxie's just like, oh, no,
you know,
hey, you know, these things can get specific and there's nothing wrong with that.
you can find anything on the internet.
Yeah.
true facts.
This is in addition to like, they're, because this is a Zelda type thing. There are interaction modes that I have not unlocked, but like in the opening temple, like a lot of the puzzles have to do with like grabbing onto these hooks on chains and pulling them to like manipulate or to like change a mechanism. Like you're pulling them taut and then carrying them over to loops to hold them into.
So it's a BDSM giantess game.
The big ladies are never present when the chains are out. But
missed opportunity.
Well, you know, maybe again, anything's possible. It's a big game. that is an interesting way, because like for any of the given chains that you're pulling, there are different places where you can hook them, and so you've got to find the right configuration and change things up as you go. So puzzles, cool. I've really enjoyed the puzzles. The combat, also really good. I've dabbled with a little bit of, you know, first person combat things. In Death is a big one. That's like it's like a roguelike that is primarily like archery or whatever. Not fucked around too much with melee combat stuff outside of like certain modes and like Bone Lab or what have you. In this one, it's really cool. So you have a sword, and then each character also has a throwing weapon that they can recall, kind of like Thor's hammer. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And with just your sword, when you're in combat with enemies who shoot projectiles at you, you can swat the projectile out of the air back at them. The primary means of defense that you have, there are shields you can get and stuff, but that's nowhere near as effective as parrying, which means, hitting the enemy's weapon when they are swinging it at you. Either using the throwing axe, or throwing hammer or whatever you have, or parrying, in the exact right way will slow them down and expose a weak point. And using that, you can really punch above your weight class when it comes to fighting things that are higher level than you. And so it kind of ends up being a little bit like a first person, almost like Punch Out kind of thing. And it's a little bit, it's actually pretty close to like a VR Souls, you know, kind of deal, because there is a dodge, like you can, you know, dodge left and right, out of the way, and it's, you know, relatively instantaneous, but you are, really looking at the combat animation and swing animation of an enemy who is about the same size as you, sizing them up and, making sure that your swing is going to, is timed and aimed right. It is very technically, it's very technically impressive, in terms of like how responsive it is and, you know, the difference between, nailing it and not nailing it. And it feels, you know, like there's a huge amount of skill involved, and it's just super satisfying to get that perfect parry, you know, which your whole body is involved in, and then get that slow down with the highlighted weak point, you know, to kind of hit. Right. So it feels really cool just to be in these kind of encounters. And, you know, sometimes you're juggling with two different enemies, and the fact that you are swinging your sword with one hand and you can throw and recall the throwing hammer with the other to like interrupt enemies and stuff like that means that you're doing some like pretty tricky shit, actually.
Yeah.
Is any of this happening in slow-mo, or is it all real time?
It's all real time until the enemy's weak point is exposed, and then they slow down. Whereas the other ones do not. Yes. Yeah.
Interesting.
I really hope you fight Achilles and the heel is his weak point.
I don't know if you go to Greece. I'm in the Egyptian pantheon right now. Yeah.
What pantheons have you seen so far?
Just Norse and Egyptian. You know, like my quest giver right now is Horus, and we're going after trying to bring Set down. Yeah. You know, it's real basic, you know, mythological fantasy kind of stuff.
Right.
And the entire, so if you're playing VR and you're in a big cutscene where somebody is talking to you, the way to make that entertaining is to do a little dance where you just keep pointing at the person, you know, it's like,
the Lethal Company strategy.
Yeah. that's the way that I make it entertaining when they're yakking at me. I really don't care whose dad killed who. I really just want to go and fight some stuff. It's fine. There's crafting shit. There's a bunch of stuff that feels like it's this is attempting to be a big AAA game. So they've got to, you know, put this in here. So you're picking up all kinds of different fruits and you know, crafting materials and broken stuff to, you know, take in and get turned into more useful things. I'm really just here for the combat. And on that it delivers. And I'm really excited to see what other puzzles and what other new, like doodads you're going to get, in order to do this. Oh, there are also, big boss fights, like big Soulsborne boss fights. One of the first things that you do is fight like a big griffin kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And you would think that would be, really sucky in VR. Like, how do I get close to this? They nail it. It actually works really well.
God, first they put Peter Griffin in Fortnite. Now he's in these VR games.
He's everywhere. I'm sorry. I pronounced that laugh wrong.
Can you pronounce a laugh?
Why do you do that to us?
So yeah, this is neat. I'm really excited to mess around with it some more, and it can't beat free or free. Mm-mm. Free with the new VR headset. So yeah. Looking at the like the screenshots, I see like there's grappling stuff, there's bow and arrow. God, I love VR archery. Mm-hmm. VR archery is really good.
VR archery,
yes.
Mm-hmm. So much more efficient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any questions about Asgard's Wrath 2?
It looks sweet. No. I'm jealous you can play it.
Yeah. It's cool. I'll report back on it. I plan to play more over the holidays.
Sweet.
Let's see. Dennis, you also said you had something new?
I do. I have the beta of Skull and Bone.
Oh, that game exists?
Yeah.
Oh, wait. The game that Ubisoft is, for some reason, under like a goblin's curse, like a fucking Geass yes. to release.
I after playing it, I have to say that there, I think it's taking so long because there's literally nothing they can figure out to do that isn't just Sea of Thieves, but not as good.
Yeah, I was going to say.
They got their lunch so thoroughly ate. They're yes! They're in hell.
Well, and you know, Sea of Thieves being a live service game keeps on having these new systems and seasons and everything. And I can almost hear the Skull and Bones team being like, ah, crap, they did what?
God damn it, they got Jack Sparrow.
You just got sparrowed.
You just got sparrowed. Yeah, well, and if you guys remember, I tried playing Sea of Thieves very briefly and quickly was like, nah, not for me.
You tried playing Sea of Thieves, but you very much intentionally skipped the tutorials.
I have too many games on my plate. I got to narrow it down somehow, and I am not capable of just deciding not to play something.
Okay.
So I need to pin it on someone else.
Okay. All right.
Pin it on something else. Anyway, so this has some interesting contrasts, but know that I am coming at it with a, you know, maybe this type of game isn't my thing.
Okay.
The survival-ish elements of it feel downplayed, and unlike Sea of Thieves, you're not able to like walk around your ship. You are either in port and walking around, or you are in your ship and controlling the whole ship. And so when you group with other pirates or friends online,
you're part of a flotilla. You're an armada.
Yes. You're a little fleet of ships, not multiple people on one ship.
So that I can actually see that I would rather play the other one, mm-hmm. but I could see that being like a meaningful differentiator.
Yeah.
Well, in terms of me not feeling useless while trying to play, that it was actually helpful because like I control my thing. I do my thing. And that worked well. Some of the sea combat was fun, which, you know, that's like all the game has going for it because you are attached to your ship. And kind of the approach of like maneuvering in on the ship that you're hunting, and then the way you manage your cannons. I don't know how similar this is to other games of this ilk, but you know, you have forward facing cannons, side facing cannons. And each has a range of fire that, depending on your orientation and which way you're looking, you know, it's going to use a different one. And so as you fire a barrage of cannons from one section of the ship, they're going to need to reload. And so combat is all about positioning. So you can kind of almost swivel behind the enemy that you're trying to take out.
No.
To always be rotating to a fresh barrage of cannons.
A fresh battery. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And then combine that, you know, every ship has weak points that'll be highlighted. So you're kind of doing all this moving, aiming. It's very, you know, it was a good system. It was fun. Once a ship gets down to a certain point, you can pull alongside it and board it. Except you can't board it because you're attached to your ship.
But like, boarding is the coolest thing a pirate does. So you just watch it happen.
So no, you don't even do that. And this game is in beta, and I trust they're adding more stuff to it. But it just fires a volley of grappling hooks onto the ship, and if you connect well enough, it takes you to a loot screen.
Oh no!
Yeah,
it's on the loot screen.
Oh, so but there is loot in this game, because that was my big complaint with Sea of Thieves.
Yes, so there's all sorts of different materials. There's a large cooking component to this game that you're going to do while you're on land, because you kind of have crew stamina, as it were, and so, you know, making meals that will rejuvenate them or give different effects, like it's kind of diegetic in that what you're feeding the crew is going to impact your performance.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, some cool ideas here. However, in the opening battle, and, you know, they do the video game thing where you get this like giant superpower ship. You're doing this hyper intense battle. You're in the middle of the ocean. There's not a single island near you. And it's just hardcore ship to ship combat. I somehow managed to go out of bounds in the ocean.
Okay.
As
I mean, that's not where pirates belong. What is a pirate doing in the ocean?
As in, like, I got a room scale VR style wall that rose up near my ship with a message like, you need to turn around. And I have to believe this is a beta only thing. Because there's no reason with no landmarks nearby to constrain me. But I spent half of the opening combat, like, trying to figure out how to reorient my ship while the people that I'm fighting are actively, like, baiting me outside of the playable zone. So I don't know if there's a weird, like, meta awareness that the AI has developed.
Maybe if you fed your crew better food, they would go outside the bounds.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe.
They're all county sheriffs, and that's the line of jurisdiction. So they just throw their big fire, their big pirate caps with the feathers on the deck, and they stomp on it.
Ooh, yar, it's with the feds now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was odd. And again, I
yar,
think
it's Portugal's problem now.
So that it has to be a beta thing, because my God, the opening cinematic, you know, it's beautiful and everything, but the litany of different Ubisoft offices that show up on screen that have worked on this game is staggering. And to have that be the case, and then the first thing I do is run into a very tight out of bounds line, just felt kind of confusing.
Yeah, that actually lines up.
Yeah. So yeah, once I was in the game proper and riding around in like an archipelago that had a bunch of islands and interesting stuff, that felt a lot better, a lot less constrained. However, like I mentioned, you are also going to spend a significant amount of time off your ship at port.
Okay.
And this kind of serves as I guess the hub where you do all your upgrades and take all your quests and this and that.
Oh, so you're saying...
Go ahead.
You're establishing that they do have an individual pirate mode, so they could have had boarding and stuff like that. They just chose not to?
I think they're going to do a Starfield where they launch a really boarding product, and they're like, well, no, there's game coming. We're going to put game in this game.
It sounds like you're describing this. Could port just be a menu? Like, is there any system, or are you just moving around and entering
entirely in? Could be a menu. 100%.
Oh God.
And not only that, but the movement feels incredibly awkward. And I don't know if it's because I am playing with mouse and keyboard and they designed it with controller in mind, but every time you get where you're going, you take like 4 to 5 extra steps. Cause there's, a real detailed slowing down animation to make things look natural as you walk past the blacksmith. Then you got to turn around, but it does this kind of like wide arc and you're up to speed again and you walk back past him. And so I think the blacksmith thinks I'm crazy.
Or he thinks you buttered your shoes.
Yep. Or I'm Jack Sparrow, except Sea of Thieves already got that.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So it just, the surrounding structure for this game feels way further away from where it should be for how close this game is to launch. I think it's coming out in February. And it's like, shit, if this was the first iteration of an early access title, I would be intrigued.
Yeah.
But this is a AAA game coming out in a month and a half. So I'm worried. The ship combat has some interesting ideas. Because I have lack of exposure, I don't know how different those ideas are from other games in the genre. But man, yeah. Skull and Bones has a lot of work to do in the next month and a half.
So I am curious, just how does it handle like gear? Like, are you upgrading your ship or upgrading your like swords and shit?
Yeah, that was kind of cool. So you upgrade your ship, at least that I saw. You didn't upgrade individual weapons or anything like that. But you do upgrade like the cannons on your ship, and you choose what type of cannons go in each section of your ship. So as you're rotating through those fields of view, you could theoretically also be rotating through like different types and ranges and what have you of weapons, which is an interesting
idea. Grape shot and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So is this something where, like, when you capture an enemy ship, is it dropping, like, you know, plus one cannons of fire or something?
So that is one of the interesting ideas. So the ship will always, you know, if you straight up destroy it or if you board it, you'll always get, like, you know, wood planks and sail parts and, like, you know, stuff that you would find floating around a ship that's been destroyed. You can only get the weapons of the ship or and other more rare elements if you board it instead of straight up destroying it.
Hmm.
Which makes, you know, that makes sense.
Yeah.
You can find elements to add to your ship. My ship has two furniture slots, they're called, which is an underwhelming name for a cool idea, which is you can equip things that have different utility buffs for your ship. So, for example, I found, like, it was some kind of rope spool rack type of thing. I forget exactly what it was called. But when I cut my sails all the way up to full, it would give me kind of an extra speed boost for a little bit, because of this piece of furniture. And there was other stuff along those lines that you could equip. So if you were trying to build a really fast ship, you might have a different set of, furniture and specialized tools on board than if you were trying to build, like, a heavy hitter. And every ship has, you know, a limited number of slots with which to customize with.
Does it model, like, directional wind and currents and stuff like that?
Man, it's tough to say. I could definitely tell when I was sailing into the wind and that was slower and, you know, more difficult, but I got the impression that they never wanted that to be the thing you were focusing on, if that makes sense. Like, it's there.
We want to make a sailing game. We just don't want you to focus on the sailing.
Well, I think they want you to focus on, like, slipping out from behind the cove to surprise people and fire on them. Like, you know, that's the part.
Oh, the griefing.
Yes, yes. Which it is a pirating game, so
yeah.
That's in there. Yeah, so it was cool to play. It's a very pretty game and has some interesting ideas, but I feel like it might be a cool game in 2 or 3 years if it survives, which I feel like I'm saying about more and more freaking games all the time.
All from large studios.
Yep.
Yeah. Woof.
Oh yeah. Video gaming is slowly dying.
I don't mind this way of developing a game. It's just, this is an early access launch.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us it's that in, maybe that's what they'll do. I don't know. But, like, I don't want to hold anyone back from, like, iterating on the product and updating it. Like, that's a great way to build a game.
Right
it
now,
just feels like, yeah.
Right now, the main consideration is when do they cash in the pre-orders and cut bait?
Yep. Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, yeah. So, like that. What was that zombie game that just did that?
The day before.
Yeah, yeah. The day before. We talked about that last week. Yeah.
The day before, cut bait the day after.
Oof. Yep. Well, the week after, technically.
See, we're not that bad. We lasted a week.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Yeah, that sounds like a real bummer. And as you were describing that, what it made me want was a turn-based pirate, like, not nautical game. Mm. And those exist, but yeah. Only dads know how to find them. They're invisible. Steam doesn't actually show you the database entries.
Oh, God, like, no, I have to.
Not multiplayer either.
You just made me think of a mobile game. It was a mobile turn-based. It wasn't naval combat. It was aerial combat. Like,
yeah,
World
that was
War
Sid Meier's Aces or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, that was super good.
Mm-hmm.
That is going to scratch the itch of what you're thinking about right now.
Okay.
If you can find it.
Yeah. Oh, you have anything else besides Skull and Bones?
One other small thing. So Diablo 4 has its holiday event going on right now. Well, hey, sorry. I actually
sorry. Am
really enjoying it. So you know, this second season of the game has been really strong. I've talked about that in the past. And this holiday event on top of that is really strong. And so I'm going to call it the Blight Before Christmas here.
Yeah.
But you meet a guy in town who's like, you know, oh, you know, we've got these, you know, special bad guys that are attacking us. And if only a hero like you could, like, kill them, and then we could like hang their trophies in the area, decorations in this area. It might brighten people's mood and give them hope.
Okay.
So you're going out
that checks out.
Slaying monsters to hang their guts on the walls as tinsel.
Okay.
Yeah. Nothing crazy about it beyond that. It's a good excuse to get in. I have been bitten by the hardcore bug though. So going back in to check this out, I was like, I'll play a hardcore character.
Sorry.
I have a type. I like games to hurt me, I guess.
Yeah.
But went in and just tried it once. And then when that barbarian died, I tried again. And when that barbarian died, I tried again. And when that, and so now I'm just in it. Like,
it sounds like you're just feeding barbarians to hell.
I kind of am. The first barbarian, was Please No Die.
Okay.
You can see the name on the recording thing. Please No Die. Did not work. So I had Bleh was my second barbarian. Because I made it immediately after I died.
Right.
And then I think this one I just got to say I'm like barbacoa or something like that.
Just whatever I was eating.
Yeah.
Dead meat. Yeah.
Dead meat. Yep.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is for some reason I get joy out of playing that way. I'm not being especially careful.
Okay.
Given the fact that I could lose, you know, several hours of play in a heartbeat. But yeah, that's
weird because this is a super slow leveling game.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't know enough to say versus other Diablos and the like. The furthest I've gotten in is I got a barbarian to level 30, and that's out of 100. And there's the same kind of set of dungeons each time that's getting me. So I'm getting more and more careful around those dungeons, but still not enough. I would say as I've kind of gotten a feel for the releveling, it's like one or two play sessions to get back in the 20s. So it doesn't feel bad at all. What'll really hurt is when I get into like the 50s and the 60s where a single level takes a long damn time. Especially if you're playing it safe, that'll be painful if I lose a character there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. All barbarians, all the same build, and I'm living my best life over here. It feels like the right thing to get into over holiday break.
Man, this is a game I wish I could play, but the like wiping your characters on seasons or whatever, or effectively doing so, just killed it for me. Like a loot chase game where you don't get loot.
Well, they live on. Pushing my glasses up my nose here. They live on in the eternal realm. So you lose. Right.
Like I said, they wipe them.
I guess. Yeah. You can keep on playing one if you're really attached to it. But they just won't have some of the seasonal elements.
They won't get any, you know, new content.
if your character was built around a seasonal affix or what have you, you might be in trouble.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm finding my joy in it. It is playing it in hardcore is the right blend of just mindless. I can listen to a podcast, while I do it. And hey, your soul might be crushed, if in a second here for me.
Cool.
Yeah. So that's me this week.
Yeah. Ben, round us out.
Well, so first things first, the game Shadow Gambit, The Cursed Crew is a turn-based pirate themed game.
Okay.
Cool. So that's one that came out last year that was apparently good, or this year that came out, whatever. Anyway, I just got one game though. It's I'm still playing Resident Evil VR, same that I was last week. I progressed to the part right before Los Plagos, Del Lago. Yeah, the lake fight creature monster thing.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see how that'll go in VR, but I've been pretty happy with the game so far. The only thing that's like been somewhat scary is the dogs. Like I just empty clips very quickly when the dogs come running.
They're very big, even in the base game, in the non-VR. Yeah. I could see them moving very fast and jumping straight at you, being very intimidating.
Yeah, it's not a pleasant experience. I switched to shotgun, like ASAP. So,
yeah.
But yeah, no, other than that though, yeah, I am impressed at like how fun the game is and like how well it's translated, where it's like, it's still a fun experience, even though I know what's coming, but it's still a very different experience than playing like the non-VR version, where it's so much more immersive. Like, for example, in the remake, the one area where you have to get like the eagle token, and there's like two sides you have to go up, and you're in this like quarry or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's just very different experience when you're going through that in first person. And like, you know, like there's like pros and cons. Like, you don't really move and run the same way as the regular game, so it's a little bit clunkier. But you can like turn and snap really quickly. And so like I can turn and shoot to my right side, even if I'm facing a different direction. Mm. And that's something that gives you a lot more flexibility than if you were playing the regular game.
How is sniping handled in VR?
I have not used a sniper rifle yet. So I still only have pistol and shoddy. So far, the only difference is like they'll differentiate how you like reload the weapon. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I still don't know. So I imagine I'll see that if I keep playing it, I guess. Mm-hmm. But yeah, basically I imagine I'll nope out if it gets like too scary, but so far it's been good to do, I think. But then the only other thing is, since it's like continuous movement, I'll pretty much just do like a big area per session. So like it'll maybe be like 15 to 20 minutes or so, and then I'll take a break and come back to it later. So that does make it a much like kind of slower experience. You can't just knock it out in a couple of days, or at least unless you have your VR legs under you.
Yeah.
So, I've been pretty impressed with it, I guess, so far.
Have you gotten a better handle on reloading under pressure?
Yeah. I think I have that down, and I have like getting my knife out like very quickly. I have that part down. I still love just waving a knife in the face of someone as a way to kill them. It's very fun.
It's akin to dancing in front of them while they're talking.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Talk to the knife, dude. it's just funny. But then on the flip side, like if you do like the ground kill with the knife or a sneak kill with the knife, that like drains your durability really quickly. So you can only do like two or three of those before your knife snaps.
Mm-hmm.
So it still kind of has that sort of headache where it's like, man, just give me a knife. Like, I don't want to deal with the durability of it. But anyway.
That has to go down as one of the dumbest gameplay decisions of all time.
How else will they extend engagement?
I
don't know.
It's not that huge of a bummer, actually.
Yeah.
I think it's good for getting you to not rely on it as much.
I would say it's like a minor inconvenience. And yeah, to that point, yeah, I can imagine it being, maybe it was done to prevent somebody from just running around, you know, knives akimbo and just like waving them in front of people and walking through the game that way.
Heaven forbid people have fun.
Knives akimbo was my favorite Scott Pilgrim character.
Nice. Yeah, so I don't think I have too much more to say about it outside of last week, other than it's still a pretty solid experience. Both of our experiences, Cole, are free games that are kind of like at the tip top of the quality spectrum of VR games. So.
Oh, this wasn't a paid DLC.
If you buy Resident Evil 4, you can download it for free, the VR version.
Okay.
So,
Can you tell if it uses any like PS2 VR, PSVR 2, whatever specific kind of features built in? Like, is it really leaning on the eye tracking?
So eye tracking, I can't tell if it uses it, so I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I know like Horizon Zero Dawn touted that sort of thing, but I haven't had like another person in the room with me when I'm playing it to like verify that sort of thing.
Right.
So I'm not sure about that. The sound quality is really good, but yeah, I don't know if I have noticed anything in terms of like PSVR exclusive like controls to it or features to it. I showed the game to one of my friends from Portland, and he was more impressed by the controllers, like the lightweight of the controllers of the VR, but that that doesn't have anything to do with the game, I guess. So,
right. Okay. I'm just trying to get a feel for if this comes to the PC version, then I'll be able to play it.
Gotcha.
That'd be cool.
And maybe if it does, then it'll be the same way where it's like, if you own the remake, then you can get this for free. But if so, that would be sweet.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's all I got.
Cool.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where normally we ask you a question, but instead we're leaving this as a blank space and abetting the shorter runtime that we need for this week, and B, reminding you to go vote in the title of the year. It is our most self-indulgent tradition. Mm-hmm. you can follow the link in this post or look on social media and cast your votes, not only for the best title, but also the best potential title, because we keep track of those.
It's a good time.
Make your vote counted. It matters a lot.
I hope they make you as happy as they make me.
The end boss. Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are going on in the world of video games and how we feel about them. Who's got a story for me?
I got one.
Okay.
This was announced during the week this last week, but it's from Naughty Dog. They put out an announcement that surprised a few people and disappointed a few hardcore Naughty Dog fans. They canceled.
You swept me.
What?
You swept me.
Mm. Oh, sorry. So they canceled their multiplayer game that they had in production. I forget the name of it.
Last of Us Online, Last of Us Factions.
Yeah. So this is something, if you play the original Last of Us, they had like an embedded multiplayer game in it, which was like kind of flew under the radar. It was like a really good multiplayer game. It was
literally the best part of the game.
Well, come on.
It was a really good, unique part of the game. Mm-hmm. I will give you that. I loved it.
It would have been a like a standout feature of the game if the single player was not one of the best games that came out in our lifetimes. Yeah. So
it could also totally have stood on its own.
Yeah, I think. Yeah. So it's kind of like in this weird situation for. So it's like the people who played it are like, "This is an amazing game. This is great." So it has like kind of a small like hardcore fan base, and so they were planning on making a standalone game for this. But they basically in a statement they said that. Basically, when they were trying to make this as a standalone game, they came to the conclusion that it would have needed to be a live service and it would have needed too much like upkeep from mm-hmm. the game company. Like they would have had to put all their attention on this, and that they're currently working on two different standalone games right now, so that they did not want to divert attention from that to this. So they instead decided to cancel this.
That to me was what was most damning of this, is that apparently the only way they could possibly conceive of what a multiplayer game is that is a live service game. Like, I think that's the most damning part, is that they just were like, wait, you can't make a multiplayer game that isn't live service. What are you talking about?
People would have mailed them letter bombs if they didn't support it for free forever with new content.
Yeah, I think it's just really surprising, because it's like they're not when they released like the Lost Legacies Uncharted game, where it's like, here's a game for $40. It's not going to be as long as our other ones, but we think it's really high quality. It's like they could totally release a multiplayer that's just like what The Last of Us 1's multiplayer was for like $20.
Star Wars Squadrons, X-Wing game that where they kind of came out and said, hey, we got a couple rounds of support, but this is not going to continue after that.
Yeah.
No.
On the plus side, this was the, like, basically I was waiting to get Last of Us 2 when they added multiplayer, so now I just don't need to get Last of Us 2.
Well, they're adding that roguelike mode.
My friend.
Yeah.
Because that's, something I'll play.
Wait, what? I thought that was God of War.
No, Last of Us 2 is getting, it was announced kind of at the same time that they're with the Last of Us 2 remaster or whatever. There's going to be a roguelike mode added.
Okay. Well, that makes me mad. Like, yeah, you can't do a multiplayer game, but you can do that.
No.
Also, a remaster for a game that's how old?
3 years old. Yeah. Because we live in a punchline. Yeah.
Like I said, video gaming is dying.
Yeah,
that's my message for the new year.
Don't let Moxie be curmudgeonly.
Let's see. So, Dennis, what have you got?
Yeah, a rather gigantic leak. So a hacking group that has come out and said we're doing this for money. We were shaking them down.
This it's to call it a leak is
wait, did they like say this out of shame, like they admitted it? Or
I don't. Yeah. No, no.
Like, I mean,
we're sorry, guys.
It's weird to me that a ransomware group has like a PR department.
I mean, it's not like they admitted it. It was part of the ask. Like they announced to the public that Insomniac had 1 week. Insomniac and Sony had 1 week to you know. Pay them a ransom or else all this stuff was going to be published.
Dude,
so like
I want to see the movie where like you know they come out with that so Ubisoft hires like I don't know off-brand John Wick to take them out.
Yeah, and corporate espionage John Wick. It's yeah, to call this a leak it's not like this was like a straight up like corporate espionage theft. Yeah. So like, I don't know, somebody didn't leave a thumb drive somewhere. This like was a coordinated and organized effort. Yeah.
Yeah.
Specifically of Insomniac.
I have no idea.
Maybe, there was a quote somewhere in this article about, we knew that developers making games like this would be an easy target. We were able to get the domain administrator within 20 to 25 minutes of hacking the network.
Woof. They said,
Sony has launched an investigation, but it would be better in the backyard. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I don't know what that means either. There's a lot of, I mean, just this is the discourse today, as we're recording on Twitter about the ethics of reporting on what's in this. I don't necessarily, have a feeling about that. Like Insomniac's, like game roster for the next like 8 years. Was reported out. It's nothing you couldn't have guessed. The big thing
all Spider-Man's.
Well, I mean, there's you know Spider-Man, Venom, a new there's a Spider-Man sequel stuff related to like Wolverine because that's like the next big thing that's kind of closest in the pipeline that has the most to leak about it.
Which apparently there was a fully playable version in the data stolen, and I saw the stat in here that 98% of it was leaked and 2% of what was stolen was quote unquote bought, which I assume means they paid the ransom for. I wonder if that playable version of Wolverine
It would have been very shitty of them. Sorry. It would have been very shitty of them if they did buy anything to hold it back, to not purchase and hold back the literal like private identifying information of their staff. Something that has kind of come out is these leaks are very commonplace right now.
That would seem like a good way to get sued.
If can prove that they decided to protect a demo, if they decided to protect a demo and then not their employees, people have been coming out in their own, you know, just on their own saying like, hey, yeah, you know, one of these leaks happened at a company where I worked, and people like drove across state lines with a shotgun because I worked on a game they didn't like. People do use these leaks to make the lives, particularly of women, minorities, trans folks, hell. This is really bad. Like people have had to like freeze their credit cards on fraud alerts and stuff about this. It's rough stuff.
So was this also part of the leak with the Suicide Squad game?
Different leak happened right around the same time.
Okay.
Yeah.
And still video games.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I mean, sorry, still superheroes.
Yep.
Yep. Just go for the big IP.
Yep. It sucks, you know.
It is, yeah. It's yucky all around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, seeing screenshots of Wolverine, it honestly feels like, you know, Insomniac's going to make their money.
They're just fine. There's also a discussion that's taking place that is, I think, deserved, which is like, okay, what is the quote press, the gaming press as it exists? A, it is not ethically up to this, you know, to like to decide how to handle what to report out about it. And B, also like, you know, the big it is being treated in a lot of places like the big tragedy of this is that people are not going to have the surprise that there's a Venom game coming out. It's like, oh no, it's disrupted the PR hype cycle. And it's like, no. And also this wasn't specifically an attack on PlayStation fans. Like it's, yeah. It is very frustrating.
The person this hurts is the person who slaves on this game, you know, overtime for however many years and is excited to share and doesn't get to have their moment. Like, that's, I think that's the person that ultimately comes out of this the worst.
Yeah. Or, you know,
everyone else gets their hype or
somebody,
the corporation
mails them a letter bomb.
well, there is that.
Are these, or do they know, are the hackers US based?
I've got no idea.
They name the hacker group Rizda, but yeah, I don't know anything about it.
I imagine it's, you know, not international, as in not the U.S. I imagine it's people all over. It's a group more than anything.
Well, yeah. Where in the world is it would be better kept in the backyard? Phrase.
Weird.
I really can't get over that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was Russian.
Yeah, my take on this is I think we should bring back the concept of outlawry.
Oh, just saying, you're no longer under the protection of society.
Yeah, just like, you know, there's one of these hacks, and the government just declares, these people, do whatever you want to them.
I have just
speed running dystopia here.
No. You can't speed run something we already have.
I've got no idea what the prosecution record is on corporate espionage stuff like this. It's hard to call it anything else.
It happens so often it can't be good.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. I'm thinking especially on like when people hack credit card companies and stuff.
Yeah.
Like if I was looking at like American Express and Visa and MasterCard, and MasterCard was like, hey, go with us because 80% of the people that hack us end up dead, I'd go with MasterCard. Just saying. Yeah. If we're going to be in a cyberpunk dystopia, we might as well lean into it.
I mean, I would go after Discover. Nobody's watching that place.
Oh no.
This is not a good story, and obviously there are developments people are going through the data. I just wish the developer's personal stuff was kept out of there. Yeah, maybe the ransomware folks were hoping that that was additional leverage to get the payout that they wanted. But
then they're definitely not American.
Maybe. I don't know.
I mean, no American would think that a corporation would care about its employees.
Oh man. Let's see here, Ben. What do you have?
I already went with Naughty Dog.
With Naughty Dog, and then Dennis went. Moxie, how about you?
I also went with the Naughty Dog.
You did. Okay.
The naughtiest of dogs.
Well, I'm going to go with something different. Something a little bit,
please.
Yeah. Something upbeat. There is a modder. There's an independent, developer, their Twitch, their itch, username is Pero Autonomo. I'm going to put a link to this here. What they are doing, and what they have just released is a demo of their project to remake Resident Evil 2, classic Resident Evil 2, in a first person mode. Kind of keeping it in the same visual style, redoing areas and redoing cutscenes, keeping it in this kind of first person mouse and WASD kind of scheme. And I gotta tell you, it looks real neat. This kind of thing, it is sure not to function as well as the actual game is, because it was never designed for that. See also like adding first person aiming to Metal Gear when they brought Metal Gear Solid 1 to the GameCube with that there. But like, it's really interesting to explore these sacred spaces, right? You know, Raccoon City Police Department in first person, and to kind of see the ways that the original Resident Evil kind of relied on the tank controls and third person fixed camera angles. I'm real excited to check this out. If I stream this weekend, maybe one of the nights I will play this before it gets, cease and desisted.
Of course.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yep. So
any wish list areas that you're particularly excited to see?
Oh, I mean, just I don't know what's going to be covered in the demo. Like, it'd be really neat if they I don't know. It'd be real neat if they were doing it in the B story. So you had Mr. X coming at you.
Okay.
Trying to realize Mr. X wasn't in the whole thing.
No, in the original Resident Evil 2, it only appeared in the B playthrough. So whoever went through, whoever goes second, has to contend against Mr. X.
That's interesting, because like that is the only thing I've heard about in Resident Evil 2. So I assume that was just like 90% of the game.
Nope. Yeah, that was a departure when they did the remake for it in 2019. Yeah. Cool. That's all I got. That's my story. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Let us button.
The credit.
Thank you so much for listening to level number 483. We appreciate you taking the time. It's been a good year. Thank you for being along, and we hope to see you next time. If you want to help out the show, you know what to do. You can leave a rating or review. You can tell your friends. You can support the show on Patreon, support the network on Patreon. Go check out Real Lich Hours. That has launched. By the time you're hearing this, like, you can get a really good sense of what we're doing. Early reviews are, it's good. You know, because Baldur's Gate 3 is good.
That's better than fake lich hours.
Yes. Yeah. And none of those disingenuous liches. So go check it out and spread the word. That's reallichhours.com. Every episode up through this year is going to be public for everybody. And then it's going to go premium in 2024. So going to get a good taste. Is there anything I'm forgetting?
Have a good Christmas.
I don't think so.
Yes.
If you celebrate it.
Happy New Year.
Yeah. Happy whatever the holiday you celebrate or don't. I hope you get to take time off. And I hope that you have fun and be safe, most of all. Make sure you get where you're going incident free. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. Well, I've been Cole. You can find me on Blue Sky at Cole Ross.
I've been Dennis. I was still going to say Furia. Last names are fun. Mm-hmm. You threw me there.
Sorry.
But you can find me on Blue Sky at Furia Games.
I'm Moxie.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. Okay, who has titles?
I have two.
Okay.
I need to pull them up, though.
While you do that, I have two as well.
Okay.
I have Kahlua and Ranch.
No.
And then I have Speedrunning Dystopia.
Okay.
Sorry to get a little dark there. I thought it was funny.
What are the titles you have?
I have The Big Ladies Aren't Present When the Chains Come Out. And It's a Beta Thing.
Ben, what you got?
I use the cheese I can get.
It's got to be Kahlua and Ranch.
Does it really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it does.
just for the visceral reaction that all of us had.
It sure delivers on that.
Yeah.
Makes me happy.
It is decided.